This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, a well-known Republican has officially decided he won't be launching a bid for governor. We have more from Tommy Thompson and tell you why he's passing up the opportunity. Plus, for the first time in over a decade, lawmakers hold a public hearing to discuss medical marijuana legalization. We tell you why some Democrats say the hearing was a political stunt. And the UW System Board President announces he won't seek re-election. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 22nd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., well, I think the race for governor kind of slimmed, but another person might be getting in. The big news this week is former Governor Tommy Thompson decided to not enter the Wisconsin governor's race. And of course, he said to you and many of us reporters, I wanted to run. Of course, his excitement was all around that. Here's a quote that he told you, JR, is that he wanted to lead this state. I wanted to solve problems. I wanted to bring the parties together. I wanted to build Wisconsin, not tear it down. And that's why I think I would have been the strongest candidate. But I can't run with my family being opposed to me running. So I know a lot of people talked to Tommy this week, and he also told WISN that when he, the other person in the running possibly is Tim Michaels. Mm-hmm. He's a businessman. And he basically called Michaels after saying, hey, I'm not running. And then Michaels apparently told Tommy, well, that means I'm running. Yeah. So what have you been hearing?
So Michaels expecting a decision next week. All signs point to him getting in. He's a building operation around him to get prepared for it. The question for Tim Michaels is, how much are you going to spend to bring yourself to parity with Rebecca Clayfish? So remember, right now we've got Clayfish, Kevin Nicholson, Rantham, official, most high-profile Republicans in the race. Clayfish has been the lead for a long time. Nicholson's been spending money on TV. He's Super PAC put out a poll showing that he'd kind of close the gap somewhat. So for Michaels, you have to now figure out how much does it take you to spend from now until August 9th to not just like get better known, but also to bring Clayfish down, because she's at a position where you have to take it away from her. Michaels ran for U.S. Senate 2004. God, I've been around for a long time. 2004 against Russ Feingold. At the time, he underperformed George Bush quite a bit. I mean, the Bush-Kerry race in Wisconsin was 11,000 votes. Michaels underperformed Bush. Feingold at the time was kind of still the mavericky Feingold, where he overperformed Democrats top of the ticket at the time. But it's been 18 years he's been on the ballot. People don't remember him as a candidate. It's been a long time. Think about it. They're actually going to vote this fall who weren't eligible to, or even born, when he was the ballot last time, or close to it. So how does he catch up to Clayfish in that regard? With Tommy now, kind of looking back at his decision, could he have won the primary? That's the big question. Could he have won, because he also was last on the ballot in 2012 in Wisconsin. People forget that in that primary for U.S. Senate, he won 33% of the vote in a four-way primary. He wasn't a domineering force in the Republican primary. Now, he lost in the fall election to Tammy Baldwin. You can say, okay, well, it was, you know, Barack Obama won the state by 7 points. It was a good year for Democrats, but he wasn't dominating in that primary. And it shows you that the electorate, the base for Republicans, has moved away from where the Tommy Thompson of old, who was his builder, this doer, this kind of big personality, larger-than-life figure in Wisconsin politics. I don't think they're there anymore. And part of the Tommy appeal, or the Michaels appeal, could be, couldn't you get a Trump endorsement? What's fascinating with Tommy is, if he'd gotten a Trump endorsement, and he told me that Trump encouraged him to run, how would that work? Because Tommy is not the epitome of a Trump candidate, right? Like, Tommy hasn't been out front about Stop the Steal or talking about overturning the 2020 election results. How do you navigate that if you are a Trump-endorsed candidate? How do you navigate that? How do you get grab the Trump people if you're not talking Trump values? Would have been fascinating. I don't know if he could have won the primary. Maybe the Trump endorsement, if he gotten it, could have been big. But in a general, you're talking somebody who is this kind of big, well-known personality. And there's a segment of the GOP donor class that wants a return to a statesman, right? Get away from the Stop the Steal stuff. Again, that kind of contradiction of, you're Trump's guy, but you're also not a Stop the Steal type. So right. there's a challenge
and
there.
And no one was in that room, but we also know Rebecca Clayfish made a trip to Mar-a-Lago. Maybe Tim Michaels, mm-hmm. if he decides to get in, maybe Trump will invite him there. It's just still this big lingering question, who will get that Trump endorsement, if anyone, and will it still carry the same weight as it did in 2016 and 2020? You know, a lot of some candidates are getting his endorsement and doing just fine. Others are not having it and are still winning elections on the Republican base. So we'll just have to see what pans out. Also this week, JR, I want to shift to the former Foxconn executive, Alan Young, was on a podcast through The Verge, which is a technology mm-hmm. business sector newspaper. But they also have a podcast. And they invited Young on, to talk about what went wrong with Foxconn, right? There's still so many people that are really disappointed in this. They sold this big idea in Racine County, in Mount Pleasant, for this to come here to create 13,000 plus jobs, but we haven't seen that yet, and it's been a lot of disappointment. So Young went on trying to basically say, here's what happened. And a lot of his comments on there were blaming the Evers administration for the company's failure. He said that the business environment, the investment climate just really changed a lot, and partially because of change of leadership. Let's first hear a little bit from Young, and then we'll kind of dive into the details of how the Evers administration is reacting to his comments.
The business environment, the investment climate changed a lot in Wisconsin, partly because we did have a change of leadership within the governor's mansion. And that's not the entire reason, but a big chunk of that is because if you remember, there were a lot of collaboration between Governor Walker and his administration with the company called Foxconn, and we appreciate that. We're grateful for the support. And if after the election, they all die down and everything back to let's work together and make it happen, we would be very happy, but that wasn't really the case. We know why, because there's another election coming up with the biggest supporter of all, which is President Trump. The kind of attack that we received almost from day one after the contract was signed was basically unprecedented.
So Young is saying that all the challenges that Foxconn had over the years is because they couldn't work well with the new administration coming in. Of course, we knew how close Foxconn was with former Governor Scott Walker, mm-hmm. former President Donald Trump. I mean, they had golden shovels at the groundbreaking mm-hmm. ceremony and touted that this is going to be the eighth wonder of the world. But in reality, you know, WEDC said that they tried renegotiating the contract with Foxconn when Walker was still in office, and they promised to build a 10.5 generation facility shortly after that, probably about 6 months afterwards. Then they said they were going to shift to a Gen 6 facility, but that wasn't written in the contract. So that was mm-hmm. the big sticking point. So WEDC told me in a statement that under two administrations, they've been trying to make this work out and for them to reflect what both parties want here in the state. So basically, Evers administration is saying, hey, it's not really on us. They did finally renegotiate a new contract. But it really just remains to be seen, JR, what eventually happens and what is going to be built at this facility.
Now, if you still had a Speaker Paul Ryan, a Governor Scott Walker, and a President Donald Trump, yeah, you could argue Foxconn would still be trying to do something in Wisconsin. But that's not what happened, because the project from day one did not make economic sense. It made political sense as a foothold in the United States to try and to suck up to Donald Trump amid all the talk about China and a trade war. That made political sense. Financially, though, it doesn't make sense to build those screens in Wisconsin with the cost versus doing it in Asia. Remember, too, the original vision of this Gen 10 facility had a glass factory on the site. The Walker administration said, our subsidies go to Foxconn and subsidiaries, period, not to their company. Another company said, we would come to Wisconsin and be that glass factory, basically if you gave us all the same incentives, which would make Wisconsin taxpayers essentially build the factory for you. So there's strike one about doing Gen 10. So, well, actually strike two, because it makes sense in the first place financially. They were trying to downsize under Walker. Walker's gone, Trump's gone, Ryan's gone. There's no incentive. And again, if you had a Governor Walker, Trump, Ryan, yes, you might still have something going on. But to say this is all at Evers' feet, kind of a revisionist history from the company. Has Evers tried his best to help the company maximize potential? You could argue no, that they kind of ran against Foxconn in 2018 and weren't really a partner in that regard. You could also argue that under the contract Walker signed, Foxconn wasn't going to get any incentives because it kept missing the benchmarks. Iver signed a revised contract that made sure they got money. Mm-hmm. That contract also provided some surety for taxpayers that they wouldn't get sued under the Walker contract for the bigger incentives, because remember, Foxconn always filed this report saying, we create enough jobs to qualify for this much money, and the audit said, no, you didn't. So there was an option to sue there to try and get the money. So yeah, they can say that Evers wasn't a partner, and that's possibly true. But to say it's not their fault is not true.
And they had this desire to get away from, the political scene, because there was, we are the media, but mm-hmm. we have to hold companies accountable if they're not fulfilling their promises and these big ideas that they told or they said that was going to happen. What I also found interesting in that podcast interview is that Young also said during the 2018 election cycle, when of course Walker and Evers were going head to head, that Foxconn purposely held back announcements about one of their innovation hubs in Madison for political reasons, because they didn't want to have any bad news or have any news regardless about Foxconn. So I thought that was kind of striking, too, that they didn't announce certain things for political reasons, yet they're blaming the company's failure on political reasons. So let's move on to the next one. So I'm sure we could talk a lot more about Foxconn, but we have a lot more else to cover in the show, JR. Let's also talk about how lawmakers, I had a lot of fun with the puns this week, in my story at least, that lawmakers had a blunt conversation over medical marijuana.
I don't know what that means.
For those who had high hopes could be the starting point towards some legalization, JR, the reality is that lawmakers are adjourned. They're not going to come back, or very unlikely to come back, until January of 2023.
So it's all up in smoke.
Those who testified, though, really just tried to share their feelings about this. That a lot of those who showed up say, we want more. We had Senator Melissa Agard, who has been on the forefront of full legalization for a very long time. She basically kind of mocked the legislation, even though she was pretty pleased that there was at least a start. Because, Jared, this was the second time in, as far as we know, in state history that there's ever been a public hearing. So there at least was an opportunity. And the bill sponsor, Senator Mary Filskowski, says, this is a way to kind of examine the bill, get recommendations, and then maybe make some tweaks down the road. So let's take a listen to some of the lawmakers talking about this bill and the future of it.
This is about a drug. It's not an FDA-approved drug, but it's a drug under a doctor's care that can help people with debilitating diseases. Medical marijuana is not going to help everyone, but for those people that it does help, it helps them greatly, and it should not be denied to them. And for physicians, it's one more tool in the toolbox. And I just don't see that it's government's role to stand between me or you and a natural product with less side effects than some of the prescription drugs that we had. I do believe that through education and information, if we can get this bill right and work together, next session we can bring it back and potentially pass it.
I do support legalization across the board, because it also has been a tool that leads us in mass incarceration in the state of Wisconsin and for people who look like me. So to that point, I'm saddened by the legislation because I want more. One of the things that I hope for as you decide what to do as you go forward, that you know that you have partners on the other side of the aisle, and that it doesn't mean that you get to stay all the way to the right, and I'm not asking you to go all the way to the left, but I am asking you to meet me in the middle.
So as you heard Lena Taylor there, they want to see a much broader bill come out of this. We had Senator Agard call it half-baked. Okay, that's my last pun. But the thing is here, JR, it is a political debate right now, because polling shows more than 80% of Wisconsinites in the latest Marquette University Law School poll that Wisconsinites support medical marijuana. I believe it's 61% that support full legalization. Mm-hmm. So these polls are kind of, in a sense, putting pressure on Republicans to state your stance, and are they going to, Are they going to change their mind? But I think we know GOP leaders are very split on it. The bill would only allow you to take medical marijuana in pill form, liquid, and some other avenues, but you wouldn't be able to smoke it. That's what Democrats also have a problem with. So it really depends where we're going to see the Republican support, because also there's a lot of departures that you and I have both reported on. I believe we're up to 29 in the state legislature. So you're going to have a whole new class coming in, and we'll see if there's maybe a change in opinion. But I think the big holdup right now is in the state Senate with Leader Lemahieu.
So first, as a father of two teenage boys, I appreciate your dad jokes. secondly, so Devin Lemahieu has said until the FDA approves medical marijuana as a treatment, he's uninterested in Wisconsin legalizing it. I got the impression from some calls this week that Senate Republicans don't really want this, didn't really want this hearing to go forward because it makes them answer questions about an 80% issue. They have the Lemahieu comments to kind of say, look, here's where the leader is. We're sticking to that. But the reality is they're not there. The bases aren't there. They're not thrilled about the idea of that because they think it's a gateway drug to, for the, well, actually, not a gateway drug necessarily, but a gateway to full legalization.
Right.
And they're not there. Ready for that. They see it as opening the door, even though you can go to Illinois, for example, and there are dispensaries down there. It's across state line.
As well, on the border. Yeah. So we'll see what happens in the next few years. But for our viewers, nothing's going to be happening anytime soon.
I've had a Republican argue to me that, look, you know, you look at the maps, what's going on, they're going to be in charge for a while, barring something crazy. If it's going to happen, the argument from a Republican was, shouldn't we be the ones setting the terms of it happening? Rather than worrying about a court doing it or something else going on or like...
Or the federal government, maybe,
so,
down the road, yeah.
But that argument's not moving Republicans right now.
All right. Next, we want to recap the whole redistricting debacle, I guess you could say, because that happened late Friday and we weren't able to squeeze it into the show. So before I give you the reins, JR, to basically explain all of this, of course... Big victory for Republican lawmakers. A 4-3 majority on the state Supreme Court finds that insufficient evidence to basically enact Governor Evers' maps. They went with GOP maps. So they took a victory lap. I'm going to read some comments, and then we can kind of dive into the details, JR. Speaker Voss, of course, said, well, we always thought our maps were the best option from the beginning. We appreciate the court's due diligence. And then Democratic Attorney General Josh Call says this ruling entrenches control by politicians rather than voters. So, JR, I guess before we get into legal stuff, kind of just break it down for people what this all means.
So it means that there's a path under these maps for Republicans to get to two-thirds majorities in both houses. Now, even with the Evers map, the Senate, you can see how they get there because least change approach to the current map. I mean, and the current map is good for Republicans. Democrats live mostly more in urban areas. The brand has cratered in rural areas. With the Senate map, working off the one we had last decade, it's hard to create a more even proportional map. The assembly map, however, that Evers had proposed kind of put two-thirds majority out of reach, like firmly out of reach. This at least gets you on the doorstep, although you have to have a lot of things falling into line for you as a Republican to get to two-thirds majorities. There's 61-38 to start this session. If you go through the seat-by-seat breakdown, so Sarah Rodriguez is running for lieutenant governor, right? Her seat goes Republican big time. So just because of where it is and how the lines moved. So 62. Go up north, Nick Milroy's retiring, Beth Myers are retiring. They're both in northern Wisconsin, rural districts that have been longtime Democratic strongholds, been trending away from them for a while. It's a bad environment for Democrats right now. Joe Biden's numbers are not improving. Unless that turns around, okay. You see how they get to 62, 63. So 62, 3, 4. Go to Steve Doyle over in Onalaska. He's in actually a Republican-leaning seat, has been for a while, but he outperforms top of the ticket every time. Those guys, those kind of candidates, are ripe to be picked off in a really bad year for your party because you're already in a Republican-leaning district. But Doyle's always up from top of the ticket. So can he do that again? Todd Novak in southwestern Wisconsin is the opposite. He's the Republican version of Steve Doyle, right? He outperforms the Republican top of the ticket. Okay, you pick off Doyle. Now you've got 65. Where's number 66? You have to beat a Christina Shanklin, Stevens Point, pick up Gordon Hintz's seat in Oshkosh. These are like, you know, low to mid 50, like 54, 55 Democratic seats. Those are tough to win, even in a good environment for Republicans. Now, if it's a wave year, like a massive, you know, tsunami, right, you don't need them because you have the governor's office anyway, right? If the wave is so big that Evers is going to lose, you don't need it. But it puts you on the doorstep to two-thirds majorities in both houses. So even if Evers were to find it, somehow beat back a wave, you could basically make him irrelevant because you override his vetoes. Now, legally, the crux of this case is all about the number of black districts in Milwaukee. Remember, the governor drew 7 majority black districts. We have 6 right now. Legislature has 5. The Supreme Court ruled that basically you can't consider race in drawing a district in Wisconsin. Now, in reading that decision on Friday and again over the weekend, I was kind of curious and I asked attorneys, is Annette Ziegler, the Chief Justice who wrote the decision, saying you can't consider race, period, or just to justify expanding the number of black districts? Moore said it's period. You can't consider race at all. Like, it's not a factor. At least the record before them, the decision says, you haven't shown we meet these conditions. We talked about those conditions as U.S. Supreme Court set down about, like, compactness, showing that white voters vote as a block and deny a community of color the opportunity to like the hand of their choice. They argued in their majority opinion, you haven't shown we meet those conditions with the record before us. Ergo, you can't consider race, period. Now, I don't know what the line is. Like, can you go down to 4 or 3 black districts? Because if you're doing a compact district anyway, Milwaukee, for example, it's a segregated city in a lot of ways. No matter how you draw a district, you're going to get a majority black district. But it's all about race. Now, the question is, what happens going forward? The Democratic groups, you know, they're not all Democrat groups, but they kind of like maybe support Dems if you pushed them a little bit. They have an option of going to federal court. And in fact, remember, there's a second lawsuit filed in federal court over redistricting that has been put on hold since the fall. There are filings this week because that court said, okay, once the state Supreme Court acts, we want you to tell us within 3 days, business days, what you think we should do. The GOP lawmakers, Republican members of Congress, and a group of Republican voters all said, dismiss the case. You got no business anymore dealing with this because the Supreme Court answered their questions. The Democrats said, give us 2 weeks. We want to kind of evaluate what's going on because there could be a Voting Rights Act issue here going from 6 black districts to 5. Now, if you were to have a trial in federal court, you're not going to change the maps for 2022. In fact, one of the groups, the Fair Maps Coalition, that has been a big proponent of, you know, proportional maps, I mean, they use the word fair, but really it's about more proportional by the statewide results, they told supporters on their call on Monday, basically this is their map for the fall of 2022. Because the U.S. Supreme Court also has something called the Purcell Principle, which says they don't like big changes too close to an election.
Right.
If you were to have a trial in federal court that starts tomorrow, it would take, or actually, if you had a case start tomorrow, it would take weeks of briefing. It would take weeks to schedule the case, have a trial, and then a decision. That's right
and
up against the fall
August.
Election.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to change this map. The question is, what do you do about 2024? You could go back to federal court with a lawsuit. And in fact, Brian Hagedorn, in his concurring opinion, almost invites another challenge. Says, yes, we couldn't really address the Voting Rights Act stuff with the time we have, but maybe somebody should ask a court about this. So you go back to federal court, have a lawsuit, and it would play out over 23 and into 24. Your other option is state Supreme Court. Now, that seems like counterintuitive, right? Because
right.
they just shot it
Why
down.
Why go back?
There's an election in April
right.
that is for control of the court. Pat Rogensack, who is a conservative, is retiring. There'll be an open seat. And I know conservatives like try and bash Hagedorn as like really a liberal light or conservative light. But if liberals win that fourth seat on the court in April, you have a clear 4-3 majority that you could raise all kinds of arguments that have been raised before the state Supreme Court. You go back on this very issue, right? That makes the stakes of that race next spring exponentially
huge.
Higher. So on the surface, like, okay, it's control of the court, which is huge anyway. But now you're talking the opportunity to redraw lines, right, for the rest of the decade legislatively. That could be massive.
It could be huge.
So I would suggest that your bosses are going to do very well next year with the ads will be run in the Supreme Court race.
Yes.
and it'll be a very, very intense race. And we have to watch what arguments they raise, but they could be new legal arguments raised in the state Supreme Court we haven't seen before.
Absolutely. Also this week, JR, we had a departure mm-hmm. On the UW System Board of Regents. Edmund Manny Deeds will not seek another one-year term on the UW as board president, throwing his support instead behind another candidate, Karen Walsh, who is the vice president.
Mm-hmm. So a couple things to note here. Traditionally, the leadership goes president to vice president. A year ago, Edmund beat the vice president, who was a Walker appointee. The board changed to basically a majority picks for Evers a year before the election a year ago. Now, in your calculation, you close Jill Underley, who is DPI superintendent. She's on an Evers appointment to the board, but she also votes mostly with Evers folks, align them. What's be interesting now is Karen Walsh is going to run for president. It is a Evers board. You have three more regents who cycle off in May. Two are Walker appointees. One is an Evers appointee. The non-traditional student does a two-year term. You have a bigger Evers majority. However, that Evers majority has only two members who have been confirmed by the state senate. So what I'm getting at is Walsh could serve, could win. I mean, be tough to beat her right now. If she wins, come January, a Governor Clayfish, Rantham, Nicholson, right, Michaels could rescind all those Evers appointees, and that board could flip to, again, that governor's appoint a majority and make second one-year term very tough for her.
So, since it's not a safe seat,
interesting political dynamic.
Let's get to stock picks, JR. This week, we're kind of going to go back to the redistricting issue. Is rising this week, you have Senator Dale Cuenga, because he was a really big winner in this redistricting fight, because he was in a little hot water under Evers' maps.
Hey, Robin Voss and Devin Lemmy, one of these maps, but nobody wins more than Dale, because Dale was actually not in his seat under the Evers map. Remember, he's in the 5th Senate District, suburban Milwaukee. The Evers map drew him into the 8th Senate District, which is not up until 2024, and is occupied by Alberta Darting. Dale told me he was not going to move his family to run. So if the Evers map stayed in place.
Even though he had another house being built.
So he basically did new house in the current lot that he owns and moved his family to a rental that was in the new 5th.
Oh,
but he's
rental,
like, I'm not moving my, this is our home, we're staying there. So Dale not only gets back in his district, but the 5th goes from being a slight Democratic lean to a decent GOP lean. He's got $200,000 in the bank. He's an incumbent. He's got, which gives a power of incumbency and a good Republican environment. Probably good for him. Now we have Jessica Katzenmeyer, Democrat, and Tom Polzowicz. Jessica is going to run for the 5th Congressional District. She ran for the Assembly in 2020. Going to run for the 5th CD this year. Evers' map was put in place. She switched to the Senate race. Now we have the GOP map. She told me she's staying in the Senate race. Tom Polzowicz ran for Congress in the 5th Congressional District in 2020. He announced he's going to run for the Senate District. So there'll be competition there. But this is an example of a guy who got moved and got moved back and into a better seat than it was before, because the old district was a little Democratic lean. Now he's got a better political dynamic, and he can stay at home.
He's probably patting his head. And mixed this week, we have Jonathan Brostoff, who decided that he's going to throw his hat into the Common Council race in Milwaukee.
So, 23rd departure from the Assembly to resign, retire, or seek another office. 29 overall. That's a lot, like we've talked before. What's interesting here with Brostoff is he's an example of the challenge Democrats face with the new GOP maps, because they're in a deep hole, and they're playing defense all the time. Brostoff is leaving for a couple of reasons, he told me. One, he's got a young family. He can go work in the city of Milwaukee, not be going back and forth to Madison. Two, he could be in the majority. Now, he's not guaranteed to win. There are others who are going to run for the seat. It was created because the incumbent councilman was appointed budget director by new Mayor Johnson. That creates the opening. There'll be a challenge for it. But if you're a Democrat, your challenge is you're in the deep minority. You're playing defense. That's all your job is, to play defense, to keep from getting to a super minority in the House. If a map is overturned by a federal court, state Supreme Court, a better map comes along, if you're at 34, 35 members, it's hard to take advantage of it if you've got 40 members.
Right.
To get to 40 members, you have to overperform the numbers. To overperform, you have to have good candidates who can raise money and have a good message. If those good candidates keep leaving because they're like, I got better things to do, you can't overperform the map to be in position to take advantage of an opportunity that presents itself via court decision down the road.
All right, and falling this week, we have Justice Brian Hagedorn, because I'm sure he wants to get patted on the back by conservatives, but they he's kind of done them wrong, I guess, in the past as well.
Look, Brian Hagedorn had a chance to defend his original decision. Remember, he wrote the lead opinion about the map, the putting the Evers map in place. The court said, didn't say that, you know, you can't justify seven districts, black districts in the Assembly, so you haven't done the homework to do it. Given that opportunity, he basically said, there's not enough time. This is the only viable option. It's not really standing up for like what you believed was right the first time. And in doing so, you're on the right side of the issue with conservatives. You're not going to get credit for it because you're on the other side before. It's just that, you know, even so, Hegar continues to be the important swing justice on election issues. I mean, you can't deny that.
Right.
Every high-profile election issue we've seen, from redistricting,
ballot
the 2020
boxes.
Challenge, yeah. He is the person to watch every time we watch those arguments. The drop boxes, he kept asking, where do you draw the line about how you define these things? We're all watching him. But again, he's a man without a home, and this is not helping him to be in this position. Also, you could have stood up and said, no, we're going to do this, but he didn't. He passed the app. He punted, essentially. And, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe it's too tough, not enough time, but maybe he should have done that the first time and would have had this issue.
Right. All right, well, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Take care and have a good weekend.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.